Lakey poles, you can see them everywhere.
Because they're the best, they're the strongest, and they're lightweight. Scott, you just got the spec sheet out on the new poles that you have, and what do they weigh?
Yeah, the new Micro Trail Race. It takes weight away from you. They're only just over 6 ounces for you metric people. That's 175 grams. It makes the excuse of carrying extra weight just not an excuse.
And do not confuse the weight with strength, because Lakey, number one, engineers and their design provide great, great stability and
durability. I was just running a mine the other day, and I like playing with the Trigger Shark. I can get in and out of those just quick. I'm probably the fastest one on the trails right now.
Scott, work on being the fastest one up the trail, not in and out of the poles. Go to our partners page or to lakey.com and get 20% off at checkout with the code TRN2019.
All right, we ready?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Don. You know, I mean, I didn't know what it was going to be like. You know, you sound like a nice guy on this podcast, but
I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards, and
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
What are you balancing your checkbook over there, H.A.W.? What's going on?
Yeah.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything. All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warr, and we're with Ellie Greenwood again. It has been ages since we've talked to you, Ellie.
Yeah, I think last time we spoke it was when you guys did that crazy coverage of Western States where you were just talking for like 2 days without stopping.
Yeah, I forget part of that. It was a big blur.
I only remember about 3 hours of that.
It was a 1 day stretch. You know, I don't know how many hours, so many hours. Ellie, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always nice to chat to you guys.
And you can find Ellie, this sounds like we're wrapping up, but we're not. But you can find Ellie in Ultra Running Magazine, and she writes these great articles. Yeah. And as we're thumbing through them, we just said, wouldn't it be great to talk to Ellie about some of these things in person? And yeah, that's what we've done.
I think, and I'm probably misquoting here because I forget a lot of things, but I think you have like 57 articles or some crazy amount of articles you've written for Ultra Running.
Yeah, it could well be. And it was funny, like you guys were like, hey, why don't we talk about these columns you wrote? And I was like, sure, I shall reread them to see what I wrote about those topics, right? Given they're not like, you know, factual ones where it's like, okay, I was talking about this is how you train for that. Yeah, I've written for them for quite a while, right? I've had their regular column, which is fun, right? Like I love like getting feedback from folks, and I like writing, and yeah, it's a nice thing to do.
Does writing come easy for you? Is it something you've always done and they ask you to do it and you're like, yeah, no problem? Or more of a runner asking you to write and you went, wait a second, am I a writer? How'd that go down?
I like writing. I am very relevant being an ultra running coach. I have a history degree. Uh-huh. So yeah, it's quite handy, I find. So yeah, I've always liked the act of writing and thinking about what you're going to write in composition and all that kind of stuff. And I am not saying I'm a expert at it by any means, but yeah, I enjoy it. And it's a good way to share stuff with people.
Yes.
So. How do you come up with the articles, the topics?
Oh, so when I first started, I can't remember. I mean, you say it's 57, so that's probably like 5 years or something like that, right? So when it was first, they were like, write about anything. And I go, okay. And like, I shouldn't say this. They've never turned an article down. So I'd be like, here's an article. Let me know if, you know, and they'd be like, yep, that's fine. I'm like, okay. So, you know, even then I tried to choose stuff that was like, you know, maybe topical, right? And mix it up with helpful, but also ones I kind of also like to write about, like, you know, I don't know, not necessarily mental strategies, right? But how you would think about running and that kind of thing, not just, okay, this is a training plan for a 50K race, right? Like, well, you can get that in lots of places, right? And anyway, then Ultra Running Magazine did start being a little more structured. I mean, I'm sure they were before, right? But in my regard, right? So they said, hey, here's our editorial calendar for the year. And like all the columnists, if you can vaguely tie in. So they might say, this is the winter issue, right? Mm. So you'd go, oh, well, I could write about snowshoe running or whatever it would be. But there's still a bit of free rein, which is kind of nice, because then you can throw in, like, you know, every year there's something that comes up, and it might be, I don't know, prize money is the hot topic in the next 6 months, right? Or, you know, doping, and should we have anti-doping? And then it's nice to sometimes touch on those kind of articles that are relevant to, you know, the chatter in the ultra running world at the time.
Is there ever any collaboration between the other regular authors, or do you both end up writing accidentally the same article?
It's not happened, but I tell you, because yes, I have been writing them for a while, that sometimes I think, oh, have I already written an article that's like even myself, right? Let alone somebody else, right? So no, I mean, we don't really, I'm sure Ultra Running Magazine, if they were like, hey, you know, whoever, Ian has already written an article about, yeah, like treadmill running, so we can't really have two in the same, they would say that, right? But no, I think there's enough variety.
And that writing process, do you go through it in your head on runs, or you drive it in your car and you kind of formulate things? And maybe this is an unfair question, because if you ask Scott and I how we do a podcast and how we come up with something, well, it's pretty evident. We have no clue, no plan, and no path, but we're hoping that you have
one. But we do talk about stuff on runs.
Yeah, yeah. We said, let's get some
and then
smart,
we forget about
yeah,
it.
Let's get some smart people.
Yes. So this is my argument. So, okay. Yeah. Like I've learned, I mean, again, I'm not a professional writer, right? So I have not been taught like how you should do these things, right? It's dangerous if you just sit down and start typing, right? Because then you end up with like, oh, but wait a minute, I haven't done this or that, and blah, 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 and it's just, and now you've got something half written, but it's not really going in, but you've had another direction thought halfway through, and you're like, oh, I'll have to start over again. So, and I used to sometimes write for I Run Far, mm-hmm. and exactly, you go on runs and you have these great ideas, and you come back from your run and you have no idea. The entire piece in your head when you've been on this run and you come back. And I jokingly said this to Brian Powell once, and he said, oh, well, we should get you like a dictaphone app, and then you can dictate the articles as you're on your run. I'm like, no, that's a terrible idea, because I want to go on a run and enjoy my run. But yeah, I mean, yeah, they come out of chatting to folks and exactly going on runs and just formulating. But I try to not just sit down and write. I try to think about it.
So as you come up, with an article, are you better on a solo run or as part of a conversation that is created on the run?
Oh, okay. I would say probably on my own. Uh-huh. Yeah. I also like, I mean, I like running with other people. I'm not a big fan of going running in like massive groups, right? And I think unless you go on like a super long run where people start getting all philosophical about like, oh, what do you think about this? Then you're just chit-chatting a lot of the time, right? And I don't know, I'd get massive inspiration. No, I tend to daydream when I'm running on my own and get ideas that way.
Yeah. Go ahead, Scott.
I just had a crazy question, and this is, we'll edit this out if it's not an appropriate question.
No, but no editing.
We were just talking to Matt Fitzgerald, who's a sports nutritionist and a writer, and he went and spent 13 weeks with the Hoka elite team down in Flagstaff.
Oh.
And the point came up that he was, you know, running with these elite athletes that are half his age. My question to you is somewhat related to that. When you get into a big group run, do you find that there's some arrogant jock head that wants to try to bury Ellie Greenwood and trying to prove something that they can keep up with Ellie?
Okay, I'll tell you two stories.
I love it. I was hoping for stories.
Yes, because I'd find amusing. I mean, also, I'll have to listen to that episode because I love Matt Fitzgerald's book. Right? Like, I've only read one of them, but it's...
There's 26 of them, Ellie. You got to get some work
26?
Done. 26 books.
Okay. I was going to edit that. No, I've read more than one. I like the How Bad Do You Want It?
Yes. Right. Yep. That's a great one.
Like, I could read that again and again. Anyway. So, yeah, where were we going?
Stories. Stories.
Okay. So I'm fairly slow these days, right? And I think it's now not last winter, the winter before, I was doing this snowshoe. It was not a snowshoe race. It was very snowy. We could have done with snowshoes. it was only like 20 kilometers or something. And we're all like, we're in a train going up the hill because you can't like go around someone because you'll be like thigh deep in snow. And then, you know, downhills, like people are jumping past whatever. Anyway, totally pleasantly and in a funny manner, a guy went past me. He went, "I've just overtaken Ellie Greenwood." And I'm like, "Well, don't brag about it too much, because most people do these days." So that was quite funny. And yeah, then anyway, the other week I was out on this out and back run, and it was really rainy weather, and I thought, oh, I'll go up to these waterfalls, come back. Rainy day, there'll be hardly anyone there. Oh no, I bump into the running store that has taken 40 people out on this trail, and I'm like, no, there's because I don't really like I said, busy trails or whatever, right? Anyway, so this of course encouraged me to I'll go a little faster. So I saw them all at the turnaround, and I'm like, right, I'm leaving, I'm gonna go and catch them and or get ahead of them, and so I can run on my own and not have all these annoying people around me, right? Anyway, so then I overtook the two guys who were in the lead, you can see we're okay, and I could hear them chatting a bit, and then one goes, oh yeah, okay, I'll see you at the end. So I thought, he's going to try and keep up with me. It was really funny, because then I was like, fine, I'll go a little faster. And I thought, oh, he's still behind me. Didn't turn around once, hadn't chatted to him, but I was in a friendly manner. I was like, this is quite good fun, right? So I'm like, right, I'll go faster, you'll go faster, I'll go faster. And then eventually I stopped at an intersection. I'm like, oh yeah, nice job or whatever. Yeah, and so that was quite amusing, because yeah, he was quite clearly trying to keep up with me. And he was just I'm not saying, he was you're a random runner, right? He wasn't oh, that was Ellie. Because why would he know who I was?
There's a lot of reasons to know who Ellie is. Yeah, yeah. Because in 2011, you won Comrades. In 2012, you set the course record at Western States at 16:47, and it still stands today.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of reasons to want to try to catch Ellie and brag about it if you can get by her.
Or yeah, meet her at the donut shop after the run.
Yeah, which is probably more fun. You'll have a better conversation there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When's the last time you've eaten a donut, Ellie?
I had a muffin this morning. I'm not mad keen on donuts, I'll be perfectly honest. I think it's, maybe a slightly American thing.
Okay.
And I know we have Tim Hortons in Canada, but
that's a donut shop, isn't it?
It's a donut shop. Yeah. I don't think it's overly high quality donuts. I mean,
well, is there such a thing?
Well, that's what I was also going to say. I think you get higher quality donuts than others. Yeah, I had a muffin this morning, but donut, can't honestly remember. Sorry.
Hey, so we have donuts here, but what we don't have is the expression "mad king." Is that what you said? I'm not mad king.
Oh no, mad keen.
Oh, Matt
King.
Okay.
Matt King. Yeah, sorry.
No. I just heard something different. That's how things start.
Can you do subtitles to a podcast? You might need to do that.
One of the articles that you wrote, transition.
Yeah.
One of the reasons. Let's get into the podcast, Ellie.
Yeah, we can't talk about donuts. Come on.
So now we have two that we're going to focus on, finding gratitude in slower times, which kind of ties into part of this conversation of somebody actually passing Ellie. And I'll tell you, she's very, very humble, because there's not too many people even today that are really going to keep up with her. But you talk about slower times and finding gratitude from the place on the podium that very few people get to stand, and you own a Cougar and a course record among many other things, and you look through your ultra sign up results and there's a lot of first places on there, but there's a time in every athlete they either have to go away and disappear or resign to the fact that you're just not always as fast as when you were at your peak. Let's talk about how you work with athletes that you're coaching that may not be as fast as they used to be, because there's a lot of mental stuff that is important too.
Yeah. I think the first thing is you can't always improve, right? And that might be a temporary setback, right? Work's gone crazy, I'm running less. And then people still get oh no, but I'm getting slower. Yeah, well, that's the reality. And maybe next year you'll get back to being faster, right? Or it might be, right? And I do think, the higher level you are at, and by that I mean, the more focus, the more work you're putting in, the more structured training, you can't stay at that level forever. It's just it's not life, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it takes a while to get around that, right? And yeah, if I'm working with coaching clients, it's, I think as I wrote in that article for Ultra Running Magazine, right, is yes, there are some people now, but I still would argue, like, you know, 95% of people get into like ultra and trail running, not because they're like, I wonder how fast I can run 100 miles, right? It's like, oh, this is really cool. I like going to like awesome places and I like hanging out and doing my like long Sunday group run or whatever, right? So, you know, sometimes I found like, you know, going back to people of like, okay, and there's nothing wrong with chasing times, right? Like that's a great and valid thing to do, right? But like there's a place for that kind of running, and maybe that isn't like, you know, continually, right, for years on end. Maybe you take a step away, you know, and you say, hey, I could come back to that at another point, right? And just being, I hate say, like, you know, a little realistic, right? Like if somebody doesn't have the time, like, I don't know, they've just had a new baby, right? And they're like, oh, you know, I can't get the training in as much as I used to, right? Okay, well, you know, maybe you can in a year or two, right? But right now, you know, setting like what do you really want out of running, right? And I think coming to the point of like don't get me wrong, like it was nice to win Western States, right? But like that it was more about the process of getting there and like the cool runs that I did along the way, right? Mm-hmm. That ended up in getting there, right? So yeah, just really looking at, you know, what running means, right? Like what's the value in running to each individual person, right? And I think for some people it is times, and then that's hard, right? Like, okay, if you're getting older, right, and you've trained, you're, oh, I'm getting slower, well, you know, but I mean then you could start looking at different stuff, like if that truly is the most important thing, right? Okay, go run like different distances, right? Or go do a mountain race when you've only ever done, like, if you can't bear to go to your local 50k and be slower and slower every year, well, go do something entirely different that you can't compare. Oh, but 5 years ago, you know, I would have done this. Well, you didn't do that race 5 years ago, so you can't do a, you know, and you could say that's hiding a little bit, or you could say, hey, it's taking on a new challenge, right?
I think, in my opinion, I think runners are harder on themselves than the social group, because, you know, I think there's plenty room, compassion, all those things for people that have been there, done that. They're still embracing you. Not you, yeah, but the elite.
Yes, and exactly. Like we all get absorbed in our little world, like, oh, times are the most important things. And like, and yet you speak to somebody else and they're like, oh, I never knew you run that race or you ran that time. Like they didn't even know, right? And you're thinking they're looking at you going like, oh, geez, wow, they've got so slow now, right? Yeah, and like as somebody said to me once, you know, like the older and the slower you get, and obviously it's not entirely related to age. Like I was just saying to a coaching client that's like 38 today and she's new to running. I said, you've got bags of potential to get like way faster, because yeah, you've only just started running, right? But yeah, you know, the older and slower you get, the faster you used to be, apparently, right? You're like, oh, I used to do this. And then you're like, yeah, maybe I'm kind of like exaggerating it in my own mind. But yeah, and exactly getting away from that ego of like what you think people expect of you. And very few friends are going to be disappointed in you at a race because they don't really care. They want you to be happy with like your races or even not racing, right? You know, and maybe sometimes that's it, like don't race for a while if you're really getting unhappy with the results you get. So
now Scott and I had this conversation just the other day coming up Roby Point, and so you may recall where we had this, Scott.
What's Roby Point? I'm joking.
And we were talking about how an athlete, when they've done that, so you think of some, you know, just really strong fast people of 20 years ago, they're still seen and held in high regard as if they were that same athlete today. Regardless of the time, it doesn't matter. They're still that iconic individual. Doesn't matter how fast they're running. And I love that about our community.
Yeah, and like our community, like, you know, like right now, Ultra Running Magazine are coming out with all the Ultra Runner of the Year, right? And I think they've only got down to like, you know, number 8 so far, and they're doing the countdown to the top 10, right? And of course, people are interested in that, but people aren't valuing you as a person because you can run fast. And in fact, there's some fast runners where people go, well, that's great, they can run fast, but like they're an absolute idiot, right? I'm not saying that of any particular, but you know, we all know it, right? Of like, wow, that person's a super impressive runner, but they're not. And then you've got the back of the pack runner that's like, you know, and you're like, oh, but they're like the best person ever, right? So yeah.
That's both important. So, finding gratitude in slower times, is it more fun to race up front or just to hang out wherever just life takes you? Is there some exhilaration in chasing that front pack or being in the front pack, getting chased?
Yeah, no, totally there is, right? And I mean, I haven't run an ultra right for quite a long time now, right? Mostly because I really don't think I could cover the distance, right? There's probably a little bit of like, you know, this is going directly to me, but like, am I ready to be like right in the middle of the pack yet? Like, yeah, maybe not, right? Because it's not easy, right? When you're like, oh, like, well, this is a little different, right? So, it all depends where you've been, right? Also, you could say like, I know there's, and this comes from coaching people, like, I think the most pressure, you could say there's pressure at the front of the pack, right? Because you're like, you are thinking, oh, people are expecting me to do well. I think when people have got most pressure are the people chasing cutoffs, right? Where they're genuinely going into races, right? Like going like, I don't know, maybe I won't be able to finish this, right? And they really want to, right? So that's hard. So I don't know. Of course it's fun being up at the front, but I don't think, it's just a different experience. And I equally appreciate like there's people that are, I don't know, they're doing a 50K and they want to go like, well, last year I got 6.5 and I want to get 6 hours. Well, that's just as much, you know, an experience because they're challenging themselves just as much as, I don't know, the winner that's winning in like 3:40 or whatever. So, yeah.
Hey, I am curious just from that comment and one that you made earlier when you were training and moving up to the eventual record that you have at Western States, that you enjoyed the training. How important in your life right now is racing versus just the training and the beauty of running? Do you have to have the races?
No. Like I suddenly meant, and I've said it to people before, like, you know, like I would go out and run like every single day just for the sake of running, right? And I know that's not everybody, right? And that's fine, right? Like that's not to say like, oh, geez, like, am I not motivated enough? But I just fundamentally like, why did I do ultras? Because I liked running a lot, right? So I would still like do that. It's a little like harder if you don't have like races or goals, right? Like they're timelines, right? Mm-hmm. Like you've got to be ready for a certain distance and terrain or whatever, right? For a set date, right? So on those days where you're like, well, you know, I'm a little pressed for time today. Yeah, those are the times where, yeah, if I don't have a race, it's a little harder to get out there. But yeah, I would say, I mean, for me, racing is still quite important. And I mean, you guys will laugh, right? But like, so last year I was doing like 5Ks and 10Ks and I did a 1 mile track race because I was like, fine, if that gives me the motivation of like, I want to be as fast as possible, which is not that fast, at a 1 mile track race, well, I need to go to workout this Thursday and I need to go to track on Saturday, right? And would I have still gone to those workouts and enjoyed them? Probably, but I wouldn't have probably had quite the same level of motivation. So, yeah.
Now, I understand from reading one of these articles that you're self-diagnosed with GSL.
GLS.
GLS, yes. Yeah. Well, I even wrote it down and I wrote down the acronym wrong. What is GLS?
So this is gimpy leg syndrome.
Yeah. Can you have a bilateral, both side GLS?
Oh, no, I'm very, well, I don't know because I don't know what it is, but I'm very grateful I only have left-legged GLS. Yeah. I don't know. You've got to laugh, right? I've got this weird leg, right, that's like heavy and tight and It's just, it's very bizarre. It's not numb, but it's kind of heavy. And yeah, and so no, GLS is, I've totally made that up just by the way, because I gave a presentation and I think somebody actually thought this is a medical diagnosis. No, that's me like trying to be humorous about this. So yeah, that's what's limiting my running like in the last little while, right? And again, it's like, you know, the way of looking at these things, right? If anybody's like, you know, listening and they're like, oh, similar scenario, right? Like, okay, it's frustrating not to know what it is, but equally, hey, great, it's not a whole bunch of, you know, things that sometimes it'd be worse to get a diagnosis and go, oh god, like this means I'm like never ever gonna run, right, or whatever, whereas yeah, I can still go out and run a bunch. So yeah,
so let's talk about injury management and learning and listening to your body. And so you have a lot of experience and you've coached a lot of people. How critical is it to self-diagnose, to give yourself permission to back off?
Yeah, that's interesting. You said like self-diagnosis, right? Because quite clearly, okay.
Which I say in a good, I say that in a good way. Self-diagnosis.
No, yeah. Exactly right. Because I always say to like if I do have a coaching client that gets injured, which yes, even if you have a coach, you can get injured, right? Firstly, I'm like, okay, like, you know, I am not a PT, right? But I can give advice, right? Yeah. And obviously PTs will often give advice and go, hey, you're good. Go and try a 5-mile run. And I always say to a coaching client, if your gut instinct, if I'm telling you to go run and your PT is telling you to go run and you're like, I really don't think I should, well, trust that gut instinct, right? Because too many, you know, like, you know, it is a little bit, even for PTs, like, you know, it's a very educated, but it's a guessing game, right? With a lot of injuries of, well, you should be able to do this, but it's not a guarantee, right? So, you know, and that's a little difficult thing to have, right? But there's nothing wrong with like, you know, taking a little easier. I am careful, like, you know, when coaching clients come to me and they're like, I don't know, like, oh, I've got a stress fracture. And I'm like, well, why do you think that? And they're like, well, because my ankle is sore. And I'm like, okay, but a sore ankle can be like lots of things, right? And, you know, that's when it's like, sure, we can chat it over, but it's also like, right, well, yeah, do you have X, Y, and Z? And da, da, da. Okay, maybe you need to go see a PT and maybe whatever, right? So, you know, don't, it's dangerous if people self-diagnose really, you know, if you're doing unlimited knowledge, right? Unless they are a doctor or a PT themselves, right? But even in that scenario, and this is where I think, you know, having a coach or having a PT to speak with, right? Like we're all on our own little bubbles, right? You know, and it's difficult to make sometimes sensible decisions about yourself, right? Whereas I think, right, what would you say? Even the other day I was going to go for a run and then Max King used to coach me and I thought, yeah, do you know what? If I was feeling like I was feeling now and I'd said to Max, should I go run? He'd be like, well, that's an idiot move. So I didn't go for a run. So sometimes like trying to be outside, but that's when it's good to have like people to give you advice. So yeah, I mean, trust your instincts, but don't actually diagnosing yourself unless you really are qualified is, I think, a bit of a slippery slope, right? And yeah, as a coach, I try and gauge, you know, like some people are the like alarmists, right? Of, yeah, like I've broken my ankle, right? Well, now you've got a little tweak, right? And other people are the like, my ankle's a little sore. And I'm like, you sure you haven't broken it, right? And so part of it is finding out like the personalities, right? And therefore being able to speak to them in the right way and give them the advice that, you know, gets through to them in a way that sort of makes sense.
So as a coach, I'm going to jump in here before you go to that next article. What do you think the three most important characteristics are for a successful ultra runner? So a coach, a client comes to you, you're looking for three things that they might have to give you a shot at molding this person into success.
Oh, okay. Hey, that's quite a tricky question.
Well, I saved it. I had it for another podcast, but I had to pull it to this one.
Like dedication, uh-huh. Right? And I say that rather than hard work because it's not just about hard work, but being able, like dedication to me is like, okay, I've got a goal of running 100 miles in like 2 years' time, right? And I'm going to commit to the process and the steps that needs me to get there. And dedication might be, yes, I am going to do those hard runs when the weather is terrible. And dedication might be, I'm not going to do that favorite race of mine that I really want to because it doesn't make sense, like in the training pack, right? So, yeah, dedication. I guess enthusiasm is always nice.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I've kind of had coached some people where I've questioned, like, how much do they actually like running, which seems a really bizarre thing, right? Yeah, because, you know, I think people can get caught up of maybe they've enjoyed it for a while and then they feel they should still be enjoying it and there's things that they like about it, but they don't necessarily love like the daily getting out there and doing it. Whereas if somebody's just enthusiastic to try new workouts, right, do, you know, do different type of training than maybe they've done before, maybe they've got married to like doing really, really long runs and I'm like, no, you should do slightly shorter, whatever it might be, right? But just an enthusiasm to like learn and listen and try different things and just a basic enthusiasm of like they like running. That's only two things.
I'm going to throw a third one at you because I surprised you with this and then you can discount it and say why it is important or why I'm completely off base. You said dedication, enthusiasm, and I would submit to you attitude.
Yeah, which I guess is partly enthusiasm. Yeah.
If it was Scott, enthusiasm, it would be the same word. It's a different word.
They're synonyms.
I don't think so.
There's a book called A Thesaurus.
I challenge you that to be enthusiastic. You can be, okay, let me ask this question for the group. Can you be enthusiastic and have a bad attitude? Is that even possible? Is that oil and water? Will those mix?
I don't think so.
No, because enthusiasm is generally seen as a positive, like over-enthusiasm might be not ideal, right? Like, hey, I want to run like all the time and I'm just going to go crazy. But that's still fundamentally positive, whereas having a bad attitude.
Could somebody be enthusiastic about their bad attitude? I know this isn't.
You're grasping now, aren't you?
I am.
Freeman?
I'm looking. It's my last shot. It's like when you slip on that on that rock going down, and I'm at this point. I'm just reaching back to fall and hope that I don't hit hard.
You're still falling, so just
yeah. I'm down. Okay,
just roll with it. Hey, let's along that same topic. There's an article you wrote back in 2018 in Ultra Running Magazine. If you don't have the book or a subscription, you need to get one. It's called Reigniting Your Passion. And I think it's a good timing to maybe talk about this because maybe we've gone through the holidays or a downtime and people are reevaluating their race calendar and trying to find that passion that maybe they've lost. I would assume right now you're getting a ton of clients that are coming to you and saying, I have a New Year's resolution. I'm going to run a 50K or whatever, but they don't have the passion. How do you help them work through that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing I say, which sounds bizarre, is like it's okay not to be super enthusiastic like the entire time, right? And I shouldn't use him as an example, but obviously, like Mike Wardian, got to ask him one point. I don't know Mike super well, but like I know him well enough. How is he so enthusiastic to race like every single weekend, year in, year out, twice, right? And oh, then there was a race on the Wednesday, so I might as well do this as well. Like, and I do use Mike as an example of like. That's exceptional, right? And it's very impressive, right? But like, that's not typical, right? And I think in the world of ultra running, we get caught up in, you know, like races are fun experiences, right? But it's okay not to be, and you don't have to be racing all the time to be an ultra runner, right? Whereas I think some people, you know, you get into it, and of course, like you give the example, right? First person doing their first 50K, they're so excited because everything's new and it's fun and they don't have a PR to chase. So it's just exciting that they're out on nice trails with cool people and having a great time, right? And then you might get to the point of like, oh, but now I'm meant to do a 50 miler. well, do you want to do a 50 miler, or are you just doing it because, well, that's what I'm meant to do, right? And you can go backwards. You can go, well, do you know what? I'm going to go and do a trail half marathon, right? Or whatever it might be, right? So I think it's one, totally fine not to be enthusiastic all the time and take those steps back, right? Like if you're finding like, oh, like training for a race like seems like a chore, or you're like really not wanting to do it, like it is fine to like take a break. You're still a runner, right? And then come back to it. And, you know, and it might be because work's super stressful, right? And you can't deal with, like, in a sense, training for a race can, it can be a great stress relief, but it can also be another stress, right? Yeah. And then finding out like, what do you enjoy about running, right? And maybe it's like, oh, well, I always used to run with other people, but then I got a coach and they were telling me to do these workouts and I was going doing them on my own, right? And it's something I chat about, like when I get new coaching clients, do you run on your own? Do you run with other people? Is there one run in the week that you would still really love to do with your friends, right? And let's make that happen, right? And the reason being is because then they'll enjoy the rest of their running, right? So sort of assessing like, yeah, what is it you like about the running, right? And maybe it was like the scenery and, you know, winter's hard, right? So, you know, when the weather's not so good. So, yeah, trying to find good scenarios. And often I do think running with other people. I know some people just love running on their own. But, you know, it's easier to go out and then it's a social activity, right? And kind of, yeah, like leave your watch at home for a while. Don't worry about that kind of stuff because we all get too caught up in, you know, that being a measure of success. Whereas really, again, the majority of us got into trail and ultra running because it was fun, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't get into it because of like what Strava was telling us or, you, oh, I was slower than this person or I ran less miles in a week. So, yeah, kind of ditching the technology and the comparisons with other people and just, yeah, reassessing.
I like your point that, you know, if you've been in the sport for a while and you're just finding that passion not there, that it's okay. It's okay to admit that all the runs aren't, you're not super excited about them, and that's okay.
And maybe you go off and go, do you know what? I'm going to volunteer at a bunch of races instead, right? Or I don't know, I've just got a mountain bike. This is kind of fun. Well, for the next few months, I'll run if I want to, but if not, I'll like get on my mountain bike, right? Do something different. Or, you know, I just had a couple that I coach, right? And they've tried ski mountaineering for the first time, right? So, you know, go away. You can always come back, right? Like the trails and ultra running isn't going anywhere. So.
And not feel guilty about it. And not feel guilty about it.
Because, again, like your friends aren't going to think less of you because, like, oh, why haven't you run? Well, because I don't really fancy it. Okay, well, that's a valid answer. So,
well, you know, the body has a lot of ways to communicate to us. And sometimes we're on a trail run, a race, and we may get a cramp because we're not observing our fluids or electrolytes or fueling or running too fast or whatever it might be. Your stomach goes. There's a lot of things that the body uses as a way to communicate. And enthusiasm, affecting your attitude, can be
a good attitude.
I want to throw that in there. Could be just a body's message that you need to back off. You need to sleep more. That you need to freshen things up.
And that's exactly it, right? And that's why I say, you know, like, I think some people are too worried about like not running for a while because they think, oh, well, if I stop running, I'll never get back to it. But particularly if there are stuffs like, you know, I don't know, you've just moved to a different state, right? And you've got a new job. Like, well, you've got to count, like, you might be super excited about that, but it's also a bit stressful, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and all those kind of things, right? And therefore, if going out running without a watch and like with, hey, I don't care if I go out for 30 minutes, I don't have to go out for 3 hours, well, then running can be a great thing, right? But that's because you're not also putting on it like, but as well as having moved state and got a new job, I've got to also train for my first like 100K, right? Well, that's not a relaxing way to run, right? And a de-stressing way to run. So
we've often talked about just emotional stress, how it can affect your physical performance. And not to talk about me too much because we try not to do that, but we were running the other day and I felt just really good. It's like, mm-hmm. I have a lot, my tank is full, I'm deep, I'll go up that hill and feel good halfway up and at the top. And then I look back and said, you know, Scott, I've had a lot of positive changes lately, a lot of stress that has lifted and I feel lighter because of it. So sometimes when we get a little depressed or bogged, depressed about our running. Mm-hmm. It might be something completely non-athletic. It could be just other stuff. When you work with your people, do you go down that path? Do you talk about emotional baggage they might be dragging up the hills?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And again, I have a... I said it to a coaching client the other day. I'm like, you don't need to tell me your entire private life if you don't want to, right? You know, like, I would hope if there's, like, you know, I don't want to say bad things going on and it wasn't in this scenario, right? But, you know, that you have someone to talk to, right? Of course, I'm not, like, again, I'm not a therapist or anything like that, right? But, yeah, you've got to take it into account, right? And so, you know, if somebody's got some massive project at work or whatever, and, you know, it often is the high-achieving people, then I often have to be as the coach, and they're like, no, 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 I'll get that 25 miles, and then I have to get on my
way. Oh, sorry.
Sorry about that.
Wow, I thought that was some, like, I don't know, comedy segment that happened in the middle of the show. I was like, you have not told me.
It was actually where we start to juggle and dance and bring out the elephant.
She's there, the, like, please do a hula dance or something. So, yeah, sometimes I have to say as a coach, right, no, wait a minute, you've just told me you've got X, Y, and Z going on. I'm not going to let you do that run. We can do that a few weeks later. And it's also the balance of if you say, like, okay, you've got, like, you know, yeah, a work project for those 2 weeks, so we won't do, you know, we'll tone the running down. Yeah, but it's still not really a recovery 2 weeks, right? Because it's just like there's a different kind of stress. So that's why it's important, like, okay, hey, maybe someone's had a busy year with personal stuff, life stuff going on, and then they've done a bunch of races, and so maybe we get to, you know, often it's like December, okay, should we just really tone it back, chill out, so, you know, overall life and running at the same time is, like, way, you know, much more controlled and relaxed, and you can truly, like, take a break. So let's
define break. How long is a break? How long can we say, you know what, that's sanctioned, that period of time is appropriate? When does it become a layoff versus a break?
So I don't know what I was listening to the other day, and they were having this kind of conversation, right? And I think it depends, because what I'll also say is, okay, yeah, like, I will give it. If somebody doesn't run, I'm going to say, like, if they don't run for a year, right, yes, it's going to be harder when they come back, right? Even if you're just, like, a recreational runner, it's like, okay, you've lost conditioning, right? You're going to have to, you're not starting from scratch, right? You're not a beginner runner, but, you know, this is going to be, like, significant time to inch your way back, right? But also, when, you know, when we talk about what's a break and what's more being, like, you should get back at this, we're kind of doing it from, like, a professional standpoint, right, of, like, professional athletes, right? So, you know, it get, again, depends what people's goals are, but I kind of feel, and this is a balance as well, sorry, I'm, like, deviating, going around in circles, but, like, if somebody's, let's say, just done a 100 miler, right, I don't know, they've done Rio de Lago in November, it's a good example, right, so they go, oh, I'll have my end of year break. I'm like, well, you're kind of combining your end of year break with, well, you've just run 100 miles, so of course you're going to have a recovery time, right? So somebody like that, I might give, like, a bit more free rein to, like, it be a bit longer, right? Of course, it depends if they've set their eyes on, you know, some other big thing at the start of the year. Well, we have to be a little careful. But I think most people should have, like, a good month, right, in a year where it's, like, and it doesn't mean to say no running, but, you know, like, much more relaxed, where some folks, I will give them a training plan, but there'll be lots of optionals written in it and extra rest days, and I'll genuinely say, like, you know, you can move those run days around. And other people, they'll just say, do you know what, oh yeah, for, like, 2-3 weeks, just I won't put anything in the plan, and then we go from there. So
okay, Coach Greenwood. So now we've had the authorized month easy session of, but now how about ramping back up? Do you caution people, or do you strategically ramp back for them, or are they just getting out there and hitting it hard again?
Again, it depends, but no, you need to have, I would say, like at least a couple of weeks of like getting back into stuff. And it depends, right? Like if somebody's had a month where they're like, no, Ellie, I didn't run a step, right? Then it's like, okay, we just need to get you back running, right? Whereas if it's like, oh, well, actually, you know, like, sure, I didn't do speed workout, but once in a while I ran a bit faster, you know, for the final couple of miles, right? And well, I didn't do 20 mile runs, but I was going out for, you know, a 10 miler, like every 10 days or so. Well, those sort of folks you can get a bit more like back into a little bit more quickly. So that's, I mean, yeah, what do you mean by break? If it's no running at all, then you just have to, you know, spend at least a few weeks just getting back into a run routine. And part of that as well is I do give it, right? Like if you've had a month where you've not run very much, it's kind of nice, right? So then the next step might be like, okay, minimum 4 days of running a week. And what are your 4 days going to be? Like, let's get back into that routine and that pattern, right? Because that can be a little hard once you've got away from it. But people do get back into it. So, yeah.
What markers do you use to help manage your people? Do you use heart rate? Do you use times? Or use a combination? And maybe this gets a little intimate, what you guys do it over at Charmin Ultra. What tools do you use?
So I prescribe most runs on an effort level. Some people, of course, some people are more, you know, numbers and data oriented. And then I'm like, yeah, definitely, like, you know, give me your heart rate. I'm not going to really tell anyone to go running with a heart rate monitor. And I do caution people who are a bit like, you know, I can soon tell where it's like, well, I ran at this pace per mile and this is my heart rate and this is this. And I'm like, yeah, but how did you feel? Right? Because we all know once you get to ultra running, you know, like, I don't know, you go do Western States. Well, you know, you've got to really be able to like pull into like, how am I feeling? Right? Because if it's a cooking hot year, like, and yes, you can get that from a heart rate monitor. So yeah, I'm mostly prescribing runs on effort levels and trying to encourage people really to tune into that. But yes, of course, I do want the feedback of, okay, so that effort level, what pace was that, right? And yeah, I mean, for some folks, we do heart rate, but I don't, you know, if people are not gear geeks, I don't really want to make them tied to data too much.
What is one thing that you think most recreational runners don't include in their training?
Probably faster running.
Oh yeah, guilty.
Yeah, and I mean, when you said recreational runners, I added on the words, you know, trail and ultra runners, uh-huh. Right? But you could probably say that, you know, like, yeah, most people, like, do you really want to go and do, you know, and it doesn't have to be a track session, but let's say some, like, 3-minute intervals, right? Or some hill reps, right? And people come away from it and go, well, that was actually kind of fun. But if I said, yeah, or you could just go for 6 miles easy. I'll do that 6 miles easy, right? Like, because it's not that fun when you're actually doing it, right? And again, going back to the idea of, like, you know, trail and ultra and making generalization, we get into it because we get to go on cool trails and see places. Yeah. People don't always get into it because they're like, yeah, I want to get faster. But even if somebody comes to me, and which I do have coaching clients say they're not actually particularly bothered about getting faster. They just want to feel good and like maybe have accountability or whatever. It's like, yeah, but a little bit of speed work, your cruising pace is going to be faster. And oh, look, your race is easier because you're not worried about cutoffs, or, you know, it's just more comfortable because instead of your race taking you 10 hours, it took you 8. Well, that kind of felt good because I wasn't out there for so long. So yeah, I think most people need a little encouragement to do some unpleasantly fast running.
Are most of your athletes that come to you as a coach, is their goal to get faster, or is their goal to run longer, or a different profile of course? Is it the course that they want to attack and be proficient at, or is it that they just want to be faster?
I think proficient is a good word. Most people just want to be more like competent runners, right? And that might involve like, oh, and therefore I got faster. I've certainly never had a client say, I don't want to get faster, right? But it's not always like top of their list, right? Yes, I do have, of course, a bunch of people that are like, well, I've come top 10. I wouldn't mind seeing if I could get on the podium, right? Which is like awesome, right? But I think most people, and then I would say I get less who are like, I do get some, right? Like, oh my goodness, I've signed up for like the rut and, you know, I've only ever run like, I'm trying to think like a way flatter 50K. And they're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I get less of those. I would say the majority are just people that want to be more competent. They know how to fuel better. They know how to pace better. They feel ready for the hills if there are hills. And they're just like, I got to the finish line and I felt better. And by default, they might be a bit faster, but the word fast doesn't necessarily come up. So, yeah.
Kind of going off topic here, if you don't mind, Ellie, and you're kind of stuck because here you are on this thing. You can't sidestep this question too much. And I'd like to know about your journey in 2012 from Squaw Valley down to the high school, the 100-mile run. What magic happened that day? Just kind of tell us about the experience of setting a course record and what came at you and what you did, how you felt.
Yeah, I felt awesome. So,
yeah. Okay. That's when the question is longer than the answer, it's never a good sign.
No. I say that in a joking way, but and I do say this to coaching clients. Nothing went wrong.
Yeah.
I just went for a run from Squaw Valley to Auburn, and it got difficult at points. But there weren't problems, right? And I have run. I can't remember. I added it up a while ago. Anyway, I've definitely run over 50 ultras. I think it's quite a few more. I can't remember. I can't think of, like, there's literally a couple that were like, yep, that went as smoothly as Western States in 2012, right? So it was exceptional, right? But that's not to say, like I said, it was easy. Like, I do remember, I'm fast-forwarding, right, to, like, but I remember it being like coming up Roby Point, and I had my like watch in kilometers, and it was beeping every kilometer. And my pacer, his was also beeping every kilometer, but randomly in between mine. And he was just going, okay, we just need to make it to next beep. And I'm like, yeah, I just need to, like, I was working like that hard that it was like, I've just got to get to like that next beep. And okay, that means I'm a bit closer. And then I was like, okay, now I've got to wait for his watch to beep because that means I'm a little bit closer, right? So it wasn't like, oh, I was cruising along and I could have gone for all day, but I feel it was one of those rare days where like I nailed it, that like I wasn't struggling, but I couldn't go any faster, if you see what I mean, right? Like I had the experience from the year before, so I'd seen the course, right, which of course is helpful. The year before, 2011, was my first 100 miler, so I think, you know, without realizing, there was a lot of like, oh, I don't know if I can run 100 miles, right? Whereas I got to 2012 and I was like, well, I can run 100 miles because I did it last time and I won last time. So I'm not going to say, well, that's a given, I'm going to win now. But of course, it gives you like a bit of like confidence, right? I had a good day. And it's, you know, yes, of course, that was because I trained hard and I had great crew and pacers, and you know, I by then I'd run enough ultras that I mostly knew like what nutrition worked for me. So yes, there was a lot of things along the way, but of course, anything like that, I think once you get to ultras, there has to be a little bit of luck as well, right? That like, yes, what I was eating worked for me, because I've, you know, we've all had those races, I ate exactly what I always did and I felt terrible and I was vomiting, what was that about, right? Whereas like nothing went wrong, which is pretty, I think, unusual in 100 miles. So.
At what point did you say we've got a shot at setting a course record?
Oh, okay. So, I went into the race hoping to win, right?
Sure.
I did not really, like, of course, the course record would be nice. It wasn't like the year before had been a snow route, which is apparently a bit faster, but despite winning, I'd actually had quite like a rough day in the race. Right. So I was like, well, the snow route's faster. 2012 was the original course. I was like, oh, that's going to be a little slower. But then I was like, but I didn't have that good race. So in theory, I should be a bit faster. So maybe I will get a course record. But it wasn't, I've never been somebody, I don't know my splits, I never did know my splits, whatever, I went ran, right? And so when I got to the river, to Rucky Chucky, which is what, like mile 78, right? I looked at my watch and I thought, oh, like, I think I'm however much faster than last year. And that was it, right? I didn't think about it anymore. And then there was one point where, so I had a pacer to that point, and then I had another pacer from Green Gate to the finish. And there was one point somewhere after Green Gate, and I was running along with my pacer. And I remember that was the point where I went into second place the year before. And I was like, that was dark when I did that. And right now it's light. So I was like, I know I'm faster. And then, so I knew it was faster, but I wasn't. And yeah, and then I, at Roby Point, I looked at my watch, and that was the only time. So, yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So you were really just trying to beat yourself. I mean, of course you were trying to win, but you weren't thinking about
it. I was trying to win. I will give you that. I was 100% trying to win, right? Of course I was, right? Sure. And I was trying to, therefore, well, to win, you should execute your best race possible, because, you know, then either you win, or, well, I did whatever I could, but somebody else was faster, right? And yeah, I don't really remember, but I didn't consciously go in going, I am going for this course record, like, absolutely not, right? So yeah.
So Ellie, what type of instructions, if we were pacing you, would we expect to get? would you tell us, I don't want to hear any comments, don't talk to me, or talk to me a lot, tell me a story, don't do any math for me, I just want to run? What kind of duty would we have as a pacer?
Take lots of selfies.
if you're going to do it now, like, please run nice and slowly, right? So yeah, like, there was one point, I'll just tell this story because it's quite funny, right? So one point I had my friend Ryan Melcher from Forest Hill to Green Gate, right? And at one point Ryan said something about, like, oh yeah, your family are cheering you on Facebook, right? And I was just like, okay, because I was like, no, I am in a tunnel, right, on the Western States course. The rest of the world does not exist right now, right? So I wouldn't want those kind of things, because some people be like, oh, that's great, I've got people. I'm like, no, like, I am in this bubble right now, and I don't want to go outside of this bubble, right? Anyway, then later on, so yeah, tips on what you should, again, not say, right? So I was then with my friend Mike, and he was pacing me, and he was really quiet at one point, right? And I was like, look, you are allowed to talk, you know? Like, I said, I know I'm not talking very much, but I'm a little bit tired, right? And he said, oh, sorry, I'm just trying to not get excited, right? He knew I was ahead of course record pace. I had no idea, yeah. Right? Oh, he got like a barrage of abuse of, why are you getting excited? We've still got 15 miles to go. You should get and all of this, right? And he was like, oh God, I can't say the right thing. So yeah, just chitter chatter about, you know, Ryan's very good at telling like politically incorrect jokes, which are always quite amusing, you know, like Marley. So yeah, just, you know, tell jokes. Don't, you know, chatter too much, right? But yeah, don't equally, like my friend Mike, going along in silence, because he's like, oh my God, she's on course record pace. I was just like, you've got to talk, you've got to tell me some stuff. So yeah, and then equally funny later on, I mean, you feel badly for Mike, he's a friend, right? So he's forgiven me, right? At some point, I think it was again about 10 miles to go, he said, right, Ellie, like, we've got a difficult section coming up here, so you're going to have to work a little bit. And again, do you not think I'm working? I've been running for 92 miles. And he said, no, edit. I meant there was an uphill and it's going to be a little tough. So yeah, I think the story is, you know, you should choose your words wisely. Please don't tell me I should work harder at mile 90.
I didn't know there were so many eggshells out on the Western States course.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to go to that term, running in the bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that is really, really good stuff. Because then you are just focused on one thing: what's in front of you, what's inside of you, and everything, that running in the bubble, getting rid of distractions.
Yeah, because, you know, and I don't know, like, everybody's got different ways of tackling stuff and whatever. And to some people, you know, like getting a text message from like their wife or, you know, whatever is like the best thing ever, right? To me, that's like, no, that's distracting, right? You want to be where you are right now, right? If you've got a good bunch of like friends with you that are maybe pacing or crewing or whatever, you'll get to see them, right? But, you know, to me, and it's not being like laser focused. You can't be laser focused. Like, I will chat to, like, you know, if I'm running next to another runner, right? Yeah, I want to like exchange a word or two. Hey, how's it going? Oh, this is tough, or, you know, whatever, right? So you don't want to be laser focused, but, you know, you should be like in the moment, to me, right? And like, just like, this is all that matters, right? And yeah, I mean, going back to maybe like, hey, yeah, if you have got some awful work project, well, that's not going to change when you're at mile 60 of Western States. So why are you thinking about it right now, right? So yeah, just appreciating it. And actually, in the first year that I ran Western States, when I was like not having the greatest time anyway, there was, and this volunteer didn't know, I just came running along the trail and he's like, oh, enjoy this section, it's the most beautiful part of the course, right? And again, yeah, like, it sounds silly, but, you know, even if you're racing, you can appreciate the environment and what's around you and that kind of stuff, and I feel that's helpful. So
I'm going to take a stab at this. It's a long shot. I would say that Ellie Greenwood would not hang a small stuffed animal off the back of her pack and run down the trail. I'm going to say that's not something you would not leave home without. You don't have to answer that. You don't have to answer that. So if you'd like to be coached by Ellie Greenwood, she has set course records and she understands the physiology, the psychology, the enthusiasm, and it has the right attitude.
And dedication and attitude.
Then she's your coach, and you can find her at Charmin Ultra. That sounds kind of like I am rapping at this point.
You are, Scott? Yeah.
I didn't even ask permission. Ellie, is there anything else you wanted to drop some serious knowledge on us before we go to? Well, we hit most of the things you anticipated us asking. I imagine you probably bullet pointed this entire conversation because we didn't. And I hope we've hit all of them.
I was going to say, I'm glad it sounded like I, you know, planned the conversation, because I didn't at all. No, that was a great conversation, and thanks for having me on, guys.
You know, I do want to come back. The last time we interviewed Ellie, she brought up one of your favorite snacks. I think it's your favorite snack.
Oh, is it salt and vinegar crisps?
Well, no. Salt and vinegar.
I have this? It. Yep.
Did you ate it?
No, I still have it.
You still have it?
Yeah.
The Kindle mint cake.
Scott,
do you remember
Scott bought
me one. I went on to Amazon and I bought one from, I think it came from the UK.
Well, it come from Kendall.
Yeah.
So Kendall, the place.
You never ate it?
No, I still have it because I wanted to share it with you. And then it just got...
Well, it's only like 4 years old.
Yeah, it got underneath a race shirt that I had to wear. You know, it's dangerous.
I'd forgotten about Kendall mint cake. Yeah, I'd forgotten I'd said that. Did you enjoy it, though?
No, we still have it. We're waiting to share it with you, actually.
Next time you're out here, we'll have some tea
for
with
at
it.
At some point on the Western States course and eat some Kendall mint cake. Sounds perfect.
Do they have expiration dates on that stuff? We better check it make sure.
We better check.
Well, so can I tell you one tiny little story, right? Yeah. Kind of linked to eating expired food. So my dad's a biologist, and like in the 70s. So, I mean, I was just born in the 70s. Anyway, in the 70s, they went on these expeditions to Greenland, right? Which is kind of exciting, right? I don't know how long they went for, maybe like over a month or whatever, right? So they kind of had this ration food. And I think some of it was Kendall mint cake. And then like, well, I remember this, so it's got to be a good 10 years later. Yeah, we were like hill walking in Scotland as a little kid, and my parents, of course, to make it exciting, they're like, let's get out this ration food. And we ate this, I think it was like at least 10-year-old Kendall mint cake. So, you know, let's go running in the next 10 years and eat Kendall.
And it'll still be good.
And if your dad says it's okay to eat...
It's okay.
It's good because he's a biologist. Yeah, it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's all about, they're trying to just move product and have you take it off the shelf and recycle it and buy more. So those things are arbitrary.
But we also do know that your favorite seasoning is salt and vinegar. We do know that.
Yes.
That has not changed.
Because when it came to Western States at the aid station, you gave me some salt and vinegar peanuts.
Almonds. We're in California. We're the largest producer of almonds. They were almonds.
They were delicious.
Ellie, it's so nice to have you back on. Let's do it again, and let's not wait so long, and let's definitely get that chocolate bar eaten before even your dad would remove it from our hands.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, Happy New Year, everyone.
And Happy New Year to you.
So go out and run.
Mas. Ellie, thanks so much.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah.
Let's make sure we do it again. And are you coming out this way at States this year? I know it's 6 months off. You got some coaching clients or?
Hey, I've got one person I got in. It's ridiculous.
So hard.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I haven't made plan. I'm kind of considering it. It was fun last year. Yeah, I hadn't been back for a long time. So I might well do. And if I do, I will send you guys a note.
There it is.
Well, okay. we may be doing the 20 hours again this year. So we're looking for people to stop by and say hi to us.
People that will chat for a couple of hours and fill some air time.
Exactly.
So,
all right. Cool. Thanks, Ellie.
All right, great talking. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.